This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. We're into the second half of March, and some spring rains are expected over the middle of the country at midweek. And speaking of the second half of March, how about what's happening in that tournament? Man, oh man, let's get up to speed with the news and the weather, and then let's get ready for some more basketball.
Live from a glorious Monday morning via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa. Then we've got Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. And in the final segment, Nick Jellum from Anastasi Jellum. And right after the news, Kirk Hinz from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, finally, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Hey, how you doing, finally, Davis?
So much better now, dude.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, man, I tell you, it sounded like you were having plenty of good fun while I was gone last week. I mean, the shows were outstanding. Great job, dude.
We kept them rolling between Big Apple Joe's Big Apple Ideas and my Big Apple mouth. We made radio. I don't know. Something came out. Anyway.
No, it was fantastic. It was really good. Really good. So
I appreciate you saying so. We missed you. I think I can speak for everyone involved in this entire process, from the listeners to everyone up and down the management chain.
Yeah.
All of us here.
Yeah.
We missed you, brother. Well, glad to have you back.
I missed you guys too, is what I wish I could say while I was on vacation.
My day's coming.
Yes, it is. Now, it's good to be back. And it's, like I said, it's time to get caught up and kind of reboot what's going on with the news and everything. And take a look at this weather. We've got Kirk Hinz from BAMWX.com coming up here in just a little bit. We'll get a look at what's happening here in the U.S. We've got it's still trying to snow out west.
Yes.
That looks like quite a mess that they've got out there right now. And we're going to get some, what I would call some beneficial moisture moving across the Western Corn Belt over the next 24 to 36 hours. We'll get the details on that from Kirk coming up. And then conversation with Senator Grassley from Iowa. I got to find out, get his take on what's happening on the southern border and what the Biden administration should be doing about that. Yep. Then we'll talk with Machinery Pete. And then at the end, we've got some deadlines coming up on the PPP that people need to be aware of. So we'll get that update from Nick Jellum. Okay, dude, let's do it. What you got in the news?
Yes. Well, Chip, to begin, the number two official at the International Monetary Fund on Saturday pointed to an emerging sign of stronger global economic recovery, but warned, of course, that significant risks remained, including the emergence of mutations of the coronavirus, this according to Reuters. IMF First Deputy Managing Director Jeffrey Okamoto said that in early April, the fund would update its January forecast for global growth of 5.5% to reflect additional fiscal stimulus spending in the United States, but gave no details. In a speech to the China Development Forum, Okamoto raised concerns about the growing divergence between advanced economies and emerging markets, with some 90 million people seen falling below the extreme poverty threshold since the pandemic began. Chip.
Yeah, that's that K-shaped recovery that we've been talking about, not only in the U.S., but there's growing concern that the K-shape is going to happen globally as well.
Well, as President Biden prepares to introduce more government spending plans, the price tag is rising. Chip, economists are busy devising ways to pay for it all. The New York Times editorial board says it is backing a novel approach that could capture huge amounts of uncollected taxes. There are hundreds of billions in unreported taxes. A 2019 IRS analysis estimated that Americans reported less than half of all income that wasn't subject to verification, like a W-2. Meaning that many businesses' profits, rent, and royalties go untaxed. It's estimated unpaid federal income taxes may amount to more than $600 billion this year. They're just going to keep on squeezing this turnip, aren't they?
Well, they're going to come after the unpaid taxes. I don't think there's any question about that. There's going to be a new tax bill, but all I know is that, you know, guys like you and guys like me and guys like Big Apple pay our share.
Right.
Let's make sure everybody else is doing theirs too.
Hear, 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 hear. Well, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says he will talk today with his Chinese counterpart. And oh, Chip, this was really fun. It appears that meeting will be virtual, but a very aggressive China was on display in Anchorage, Alaska last Thursday and Friday. Perhaps you heard about it. China's director of the Central Commission for Foreign Affairs, Yang Jiechi, went on a 20-minute tear. Now, that did include translation about the superiority of Chinese-style democracy and America's sins. The latter included a reference to Black Lives Matter, a human rights problem, and that the U.S., quote, has exercised long-arm jurisdiction and suppression. Isn't that the pot calling the kettle red, Chip?
Yeah, no question. They've got some issues that they need to take a look at inside their borders, too.
Well, speaking of China, that country imported just 1.03 million metric tons of beans from Brazil during January and February, an 80% dive from last year. Delayed crop development and persistent rains have slowed harvest and the export of Brazilian beans to China. That's to the benefit of the United States, where exports to China totaled 11.9 million metric tons during the same period. That's nearly double last year's shipments. And finally, Chip, let's not lose sight of this. American whiskey makers were enjoying rising sales to Europe before 2018. Last year, those whiskey exports shrank 37% from 2018 when the EU imposed levies in retaliation for U.S. duties on steel and aluminum imports. Now, the European Union is threatening to raise tariffs on American whiskeys to 50% by June 1 unless the two sides can negotiate a solution. This is getting awfully serious now when you start fiddling with whiskey. Chip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But if they put a tariff on, it just leaves more for us. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate it, buddy. Let's bring in Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing great, Chip. This weather is unbelievable, and I just pray it continues to stay around.
Yeah, it's beautiful here today. We've got some rains coming in this afternoon. Kirk, it feels like spring. I know that the calendar says it's spring. What about the weather? Is it going to be stick around for a while?
Yeah. Yeah, we really don't have any cold in the forecast at all. It could be next week, following week, 3 to 4 weeks out. I mean, I think we can confidently say, at least these temperatures wise, that spring is definitely here to stay and has sprung. So that's encouraging. I'm encouraged about that. I don't think anybody's going to be mad about that.
No, absolutely. Got that system out west, Colorado, western Nebraska, Kansas. Is that going to make its way across the Midwest?
Yeah, so it is. It is going to make its way, you know, further east in portions of Iowa and into Missouri. The best, biggest threats are going to stay kind of, because it's an upper level low, so it's going to kind of sit and spin, and especially across the central plains. So especially Kansas, Nebraska, portions of Missouri, that area. I mean, Nebraska, Kansas, holy smokes, 1 to 2 inches plus, some areas getting 3 inches. And this is coming from, you know, the last couple weeks that have been super active. So talk about a big flip out in those areas.
Wow. Okay. Any reason to be concerned about some severe weather?
I do think, yes. So not significant severe weather like we saw in some areas last week, but some strong storms going to be possible in the next couple areas in the southern plains. Watching for a pretty big wind event possible in the Ohio Valley later this week. So it's definitely going to stay active. I think that's going to be the theme.
This one might catch you off guard, Kirk. If it does, just say so and we'll end it. Any sure. change coming for Australia?
We'll have to do some more research on that one, Chip. We can always follow up on that one for sure.
Very good. Very good. Yep. Maybe we'll get an update on that for this afternoon. Thanks, buddy. That's Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. We've got Senator Grassley up next right here on AgriTalk. The 2020 harvest is long over, but managing resistant weeds remains key as we move into 2021. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here today. Steve, how does a lack of weed seed bank management impact a grower's potential yield?
So essentially, deposits are made to the bank from the reserve of weed seeds developed from unmanaged infestations or weed escapes. And once those deposits are made into the ground, seeds can grow and mature into more weeds, creating a cycle that can be really hard to stop. As this happens, fields are at a higher risk for resistance to develop, and herbicide applications become less effective year over year.
Yeah, so you mentioned to me that you have four key ways that growers can keep their weed seed bank accounts low. What are those?
Sure thing. There are four key actions that we always talk about to help growers minimize risks of the weed seed bank building in their fields. These include using full labeled rates of herbicides that optimize coverage and control, apply herbicides before the largest weed in the field reaches 4 inches in height, scout fields for problem areas and identify those weeds. Clean equipment between fields is really important, especially at harvest, to prevent seeds from spreading. It's also important to keep in mind that new herbicide technology should not be treated as a silver bullet for resistant weed management. Instead, new herbicides should be used as an additional tool in an integrated, comprehensive weed management program.
Wow, that is excellent perspective right there. Steve, what's your recommended herbicide that offers the best comprehensive program in corn?
In corn, Acuron herbicide will help fields start clean and protect them from weeds prior to emergence, so you can control weeds now and in the future as a premium resistance management solution. With four active ingredients and three effective sites of action, Acuron is the best herbicide solution for control of resistant weed biotypes with built-in weed resistance management. Remember, Acuron also provides growers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergence at a full label rate, in addition to helping prevent increasing that weed seed bank.
Got to keep that weed seed bank low. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Delaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Delaro Complete from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Jim Corey, and we've got Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa with us. Senator, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
Very good. I'm glad to be with you, and we're probably only a month away today from starting planting on the Grassley farm, assuming the weather cooperates.
Yeah, well, boy, the weather is certainly cooperating right now. We're going to get some of those spring rains at the end of March. It's going to be it's going to be some welcome relief, no doubt. Speaking of welcome relief, I would sure like to see some relief down on the southern border. What do you make of how the Biden administration is handling the situation on the U.S. southern border?
Everything that they criticized Trump for, they're doing. And they're doing it even in a more egregious way. And that is that they aren't letting the public know for sure what's going on, because they aren't letting TV cameras and reporters and journalists in to see what's going on. And at least the people knew what was going on when Trump was having that trouble. But then Trump got the border under control, and since Biden's been president, it isn't just loosening up the border. It's a situation where they're actually inviting people into our country. And when I see the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, on television this weekend, it's very disturbing when he tells me that the border's protected and secure, because it's not, and that's a bad situation. So I'll just leave the answer there.
Okay, the House has been working on some immigration bills. Passed two immigration bills last week along party lines. There is new legislation needed, or should the U.S. just simply enforce laws that are already on the books?
Well, you ought to enforce the laws that are on the books, and that's another thing that I think the Secretary of Homeland Security misled us on television this past weekend. And basically, they aren't being enforced. And when it comes to needing new law, yeah, there's some need for agriculture workers for some new law, And there's even a rationale for letting the DACA kids, the kids that come here with their parents, I say those kids didn't break the law. Their parents broke the law. So legalizing them would be legitimate. But how do you get enough votes to provide for farm workers and to provide for the kids when the border is open and they're flowing in faster than you can pass a law to legalize them? If they would secure the border, and I mean really secure it, so you only enter this country if you have permission to enter it, then they could pass almost any immigration law. Yeah. But they don't have any credibility when they want to pass immigration law, and they don't do anything to stop the situation from getting worse.
Yep, well put, well put. Okay, you've got a couple of bills that you're working on right now. One would basically require an audit of how states are using pandemic recovery stimulus money, right?
Yeah, because we want to make sure that it's being used what it was intended to be used for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that may, if we go through that audit, are we a little concerned about what we might find out, how that money is being used by some states?
Well, if we find out that it's wrong and they violated the law, what they did, if the money's spent, it's probably like locking the barn door after the horse has been stolen. But I think that transparency brings accountability. And we need to know these things so we don't repeat them.
Right. Very good. Another one is that you think it's time to put TV cameras in the federal courtrooms, right?
Well, 46 out of our 50 states, I think, allow cameras in the courtroom. There's been some experiments at the federal level, but no determination that cameras ought to be in unless the judge gives a reason for keeping them out, which puts the journalists and the TV and radio in a very strong position vis-a-vis the courts. So there's a couple reasons for doing it. Okay. One, I think it keeps judges that tend to be dictators a little bit under control. And I think that educating the public about the judicial branch of government is a smart thing to do. Like 35 years ago, we put Senate on television. It gives people an opportunity to see how government works, make their judgments based on what they see. They ought to be able to do the same thing for the judicial branch of government.
Gotcha. Very good. Okay. Last week, FBI Director Wray gave his assessment of the domestic violence seen in U.S. cities in 2020. What's the follow-up to that hearing? Is there going to be an effort to get control of violence more quickly when it erupts again?
Well, the answer is yes, we ought to learn something from it, or otherwise you're going to repeat the same mistakes of the past. So I think in regard to just keeping it under control is to make sure public knows that you aren't going to get away with something. Yeah. So the arrest and prosecution of the people is a very important thing, and I hope that that the FBI director follows through. But a lot of it is support for local law enforcement as well, and a lot of it comes from local law enforcement. But the intelligence that local law enforcement gets from the FBI is very key to making sure that local law enforcement keeps on it. But I think there you get back to something you just stated about immigration. Enforcing the law is very important.
Yep.
And I think in this town there's an effort to put all the concentration on what happened here at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. And a lot of people would refer to that as far-right demonstrations and violence, and I think it needs to be focused across the political spectrum, whether it's Antifa on the left or whether it's the Proud Boys on the right. They all ought to be treated the same. But too many people in this town want to forget about what happened last summer with the rioting and the 700 policemen being attacked and hurt, and all the stealing and burning that went on in some of our major cities.
Right, right, absolutely. Okay. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack is going to be talking tonight with his Chinese counterparts. Trade is going to be part of the conversation. What message should Secretary Vilsack send the Chinese?
I think it's pretty simple at this point as it relates to agriculture. They made promises of over 2 years. Now we're into the second year already. They said they were going to buy $80 billion of agriculture products. Now, I don't know if that includes ethanol, which maybe comes under energy and would be on top of the $80 billion. But either way, just make sure that they're going to meet their commitments.
Excellent. Excellent. Senator, after the Des Moines Register poll earlier this month, I've got to ask a question. If you've made a decision on whether or not to run for an eighth term in the Senate.
Oh, I'll tell you like I've been telling everybody. That's going to come during September, October, or November. A year to run a campaign is plenty long, and I've got to consult with family, got to consult with my constituents, and just think it through. And you know, I'm working on all that right now.
Right. What might be the deciding factor in whether or not you run?
Yeah. Well, right now, there isn't a deciding factor. That'd be asking me to speculate. Right now, I like my work. I get to the office at 6 o'clock in the morning. Generally, we don't get home until about 6:30 at night, and I'm still going to all the 99 counties. I've got 22 out of the way now, and I think during the Easter break, I'll get another 24 out of the way. And so just working for the people of Iowa, liking my work, and that all's going to play into the decision I'm going to make September, October, November.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, we've got a basketball game to get ready to watch, don't we?
Yeah. And I'm going to be cheering for the Hawkeyes. I wish you and I was in there someplace, but they didn't make it this year.
That's right. That's right. Senator, thank you so much. We'll talk again next month during Meat on the Table month. Thank you so much. That is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. We've got Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, up next right here on AgriTalk. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beige, the bean oil market did correct to the downside last week, but today it's off and running again, isn't it?
Yeah, sprinting here, Chip, and really bull spread aggressively in that market. And you know, we got meal going the opposite direction, and you got soybeans kind of caught in the middle. So favoring the downside a little bit on soybeans, but boy, meal's pulling really hard to the downside. Soy oil is pulling really hard to the upside, and we'll see which one wins out at the end here.
Gotcha. Great export sales announced to China last week on corn. Not much of a price reaction then, not much of a price reaction now to it.
Yeah, and weekly export inspections were huge again for corn. So not only are we selling a lot of corn, but the past 2 weeks have just been absolutely monstrous in terms of what we're shipping. So, you know, that needs to happen to get to USDA's export forecast. We need to have those aggressive shipments the rest of the marketing year. And the past 2 weeks say it's happening right now.
Excellent. Excellent. Wheat, some mixed trade going on there, some pressure on the HRW market because of some moisture, I would assume, but we've got some strength in live cattle futures.
Yeah, the cattle market, it started out really quiet, to be honest with you. Just really choppy trade to kick off the day here. But now we've seen buyer interest start to build a little bit, and I think that's a positive. The April contracts kind of stabilized a little bit, and maybe we'll get some firmer cash cow trade as we move through the week. Hog market, we got the April contract trading just above unchanged, but everything else is moderately to sharply lower there. So some profit taking after recent strong gains in that market.
Yeah, some profit taking after a big move last week. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? CalfPerk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get CalfPerk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're going to have a conversation with Machinery Pete in just a moment after we get to this industry spotlight. Planting is right around the corner. It's one of those times of the year that the grower has got to be as efficient as possible. Joining me is Chad Christensen, premium diesel expert from Senex. That's the energy brand of CHS, to talk about how the right fuel can keep your equipment running at its peak and how to avoid those costly downtimes. Chad, what are some of the risks of running a subpar fuel?
Well, similar to the saying that you are what you eat, your equipment will only run as good as the fuel that you use. And spring planting usually means long hours in the field with the potential of sloppy and wet conditions and the high risk of water and contaminants entering your fuel system, plugging those filters, even fouling some injectors. And if you're not running a quality fuel and just a typical number two diesel that doesn't contain those additives to protect your equipment, you could see some downtime during this already busy planting season.
Yeah, no question. So how does fuel quality make a difference when it comes to the efficiency?
Well, premium diesel like Ruby Fieldmaster and Synex Roadmaster XL have a multifunctional additive package. It's built to decrease that dreaded downtime by helping to reduce those maintenance costs and expensive repairs. High-cetane premium diesel fuels like Synex Roadmaster have been trusted for years by farmers and used for decades. And we have an industry-leading detergent that prevents the injector deposits, all while restoring your power and fuel economy, and our aggressive demulsifier that separates that harmful water.
All right. Hey, real quick, anything else that we need to think about this spring?
I'd say just check that fuel tank for water, and if there's any, get rid of it.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, for growers interested in learning more, where do they go?
Well, I'd contact your local Synex premium diesel dealer or visit us at Synex.com. That's Cenex.com, and have a successful and safe planting season.
Excellent. Thank you, Chad. That is Chad Christensen, premium diesel expert from Synex. Okay, let's get to the conversation right now with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well, Chip. How you doing?
Doing just fine, just fine. Hey, thanks for stepping in last week. Couple of great conversations that you had.
Oh, it was really fun. You got a great team there, Chip, with Davis, Joe, and John. They made it easy. And, yeah, it's always fun to talk iron. And I hope the fish were biting for you, bud, when you were out last week.
Yeah, we caught a few. We caught a few.
Well, that's good.
So, all right, let's get to what's going on out there, because you were in, well, you weren't too far from home on Friday doing a Machinery Pete TV show, right?
Yeah, it was our first auction for season 9, which will be coming up, and we were in Hector, Minnesota on Friday, kind of poking out toward west central Minnesota where I grew up here, right, Chip? And
yeah.
This was a farm auction for Donovan Vandervoort by our good friends at the Steffes Group. And nice equipment. Again, a really strong sale. The tractors, I guess, really caught my eye, Chip. Had three John Deere tractors with a bit of age on them that sold well. An 08 John Deere 7630 mechanical front. It's over 2,700 hours at $93,000. Highest auction price in over 6 years. Had an 07 model 7730 mechanical, 4,131 hours at 91,000, pretty strong there. Yeah. And then an 05 Deere 8220 mechanical front, just under 4,200 hours at 93,000. And then Donovan did throw in one red one on tracks. He had a 14 Case Edge Steiger 470 quad, just over 1,500 hours. That came in at 245. and talking to our friends at Steffes Chip, they had kind of appraised it at 220, 225, so 245 again. Another strong sale there Friday for sure.
All right. You know, we talk about the prices that are being paid, that it is paid for the equipment. We don't talk mm-hmm. often about the seller, Greg. Mm-hmm. Was the seller satisfied with the prices?
I think sellers pretty much, you know, all over the country have been satisfied here yeah. the last 6 months, Chip. I mean, because again, when you work off historical comparisons and prices are trending up, you know, that 5 to 10% range, again, on the good condition stuff, if it's yeah. if it's average to below average, I mean, those prices are pretty static or maybe dropping. But yeah, I think Donovan had to be pretty happy. If he wasn't or any seller wasn't, I would just invite them into our machine repeat auction price data and see for yourself yeah. what stuff has been bringing. And again, 93,000 on that 7630, it's the highest in over six years. So yeah. again, rang the bell big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Was one of those your pick of the week, or have you got something else?
Well, our pick of the week, we're segueing here because our friends yeah. at the Steffes Group, the day before that last Friday, so last Thursday at their consignment auction in Litchfield, Minnesota, just down the road, okay. right on Highway 12 there, which I wore a groove in when I was a kid growing up in Minnesota. But they had a 1988 John Deere 4450 mechanical front, 5,476 hours, sold for $56,000. And get this, there were five different bidders in on it from 50,000 on. So 56K on a 4450, that's tied for the 10th highest price ever. And again, it had almost 5,500 hours on it. So just incredible strength there. And our good friends at the Steffes Group, Chip, I tell you what, I was looking at their website this week, steffesgroup.com, this yeah. week. Through Saturday, they have 13 machinery auctions, 3 land auctions, and 1 hay auction. So check that out, folks. They got some really nice sales. SteffesGroup.com. And I was talking to Scott Steffes at the yep. sale Friday, and I said, Scott, how many auctions did you guys have last year? And I think it was between 500 and 600, and that was up okay. from 360 the year before. So they've just been cranking there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, five bidders in on that one tractor yeah. from 50,000 on. That's kind of that's got to be how most of these auctions are wrapping up, isn't it? I mean, with the yeah. prices that we're seeing.
Yeah, I found it was interesting at the auction Friday. Of course, so many folks were talking about that 4450 yeah. from Thursday, Chip, and that's the perfect example there. You know, I'll write a story and say this tractor brought a high price, and people say, well, it was just one guy that bid on it. And it's like, right. no.
No.
When the good condition stuff, it is super competitive. And right. again, five bidders in above 50, to me, was a perfect anecdote for what we're seeing out there right now.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I wanted to bring it up again. Take us out to Nebraska, out to West Point.
Yeah, Saturday, our good friends at Olson Pearson Auction and Realty, they had a cool auction, a farm sale. Folks maybe saw the YouTube video I posted yesterday. It was International 3588, a 2+2, one of the big Snoopies, the anteaters, alligators, whatever you call them. 4,580 hours on it, brought 22.5. Same story here, Chip, second highest auction price ever. The only higher one I've seen was 24K back end of August of 19, Durant, Iowa. And Olson Pearson also had a dandy 1086 on that sale. And here again, 8,900 hours on it, new clutch and TA, 500 hours, but that brought 18,900. So some pretty strong prices on good yeah. older iron Saturday out in Nebraska.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Okay. Over to Anawan, Illinois.
Oh, incredible here. Friday, Anawan, our friends at Hetzer Nordstrom had their big consignment sale in Anawan there. 1990 John Deere 4455 mechanical, 4,369 original hours. This thing sold for $69,500 bucks, Chip. Second highest in over 5 years, seventh highest ever. And again, just consider, crazy nut that I am, how many auction prices I've seen on a 4455 for 31 plus years. And this is tied for the seventh highest ever. And again, pushing 4,400 hours, so it wasn't like it looped along at 1,500 hours. So just incredibly strong bidding there.
Wow. Wow. All right. I don't mean to bring you down or anything, but let's talk blue.
We gotta show some love to our blue friends out there, Ford New Holland. So this past Tuesday, how about this? Zomer Auctioneering and Associates had an online sale, and they had, from Vermilion, South Dakota, a 98 New Holland 8970, super sharp, 3,575 hours on it. You can see a picture of it, folks, on our website, posted a blog yesterday. But it brought $76,000. Again, I don't mean to be a broken record here, folks, but that's the second highest auction price I've ever seen on a New Holland 8970. And get this, the only price higher was August 26th of 2010, and that was only $300 higher, $76,300, and that one only had 1,573 hours on it. So again, almost 3,600 hours Tuesday for 76. And if we stay with the blue theme, also last Tuesday, our good friends at Henslin Auctions, they had a sale out in Renville, Minnesota, which, do a shout out here, it's basketball playoff time, home of the Minnesota famous Mulder Brothers from the early 1970s. But they had on the sale a 2007 New Holland TG215, 2,133 hours, brought $81,000, highest auction price I've ever seen on a TG215. Same deal here. The previous high was $77,000, November 20th of 2010. So, again, it doesn't matter what color it is. If it's got some age on it and if it's in good shape, it is just hotter than hot right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredible, these reports. Highest prices in 10 years, and seems like everything's getting in the top 10 of prices paid. It's pretty incredible stuff. 10 seconds, what you got going this week?
Oh, this week, we're right in the middle of it. Tons of auctions, folks. Yep. Just check out machinerypete.com. I'll be blogging, and lots going on out there.
Excellent. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate you, buddy. That is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Okay, when we come back, we've got some deadlines coming up on the Paycheck Protection Program. As a matter of fact, some deadlines have already passed us, but there's still time to get signed up. We'll talk to Nick Jellum about that next, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. It's good to be back on the show. Just got a note from John Harith, the Farm Journal News Director. AgriPulse is having a summit right now, and David Scott, the chairman of the House Ag Committee, is speaking, and he said that he and ranking member Glenn G.T. Thompson will introduce a joint rural infrastructure plan that will put broadband as the top priority. That's interesting.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
we need that.
Yeah. That's happening at a time when Starlink feels like it's about to get up and running, you know, and have a big impact in a big way. So competition is always good. There's nothing wrong with some competition either. So
it's the American way. It's the American way. Yeah, it's what we do.
That's right. That's right.
We compete and we save.
All right. Let's get into this conversation right now with attorney Nick Jellum. He is with Anastasi Jellum, joins us right now. Nick, hey, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Good morning, Chip. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay. Some deadlines have already passed on the application for the Paycheck Protection Program. But the big deadline is coming up at the end of the month, isn't it?
Yeah, so the current deadline for applications for the Paycheck Protection Program is March 31st.
Right.
I do want to share with the listeners that the House of Representatives last week passed a bill to extend the deadline to May 31st, and that bill is currently with the Senate. However, right now, again, the deadline is March 31st. While everybody is hoping that the deadline will be extended, there's no guarantee of that.
Right.
And again, even if it is extended, you and I have talked before that this program is subject to funds availability. So even if it's extended, there's still a need for your listeners to apply as quickly as possible.
Yep. Nick, it's been, what, 10 months, something like that, 9 months since the Paycheck Protection Program has been available. But I think there's still some misunderstandings about who is eligible for PPP loans.
Yeah, that's really the heart of the issue that I see specifically for the agriculture community. And in talking with friends, I think I shared with you in a prior discussion, I grew up on a small dairy farm in western Minnesota. And so, you know, doing this, working with lenders and borrowers with this program day in, day out, I've had a chance to talk to some of my family and friends that are in the agriculture community. And I was disappointed to hear that there is this misunderstanding of who the Paycheck Protection Program really applies to. And I think part of that, Chip, is because of the title. I think there's a misconception that you have to have employees in order to qualify, which just isn't true. I mean, this program is aimed to help not just corporations such as farm corporations, but also small producers such as sole proprietors, self-employed, and independent contractors. So there's no minimum loan size, which is great. I've helped borrowers and lenders on loans as small as $500, but all the way up to the maximum loan of $10 million as well. So it really is meant to help everybody in the industry.
Nick, what are the restrictions on how the funds can be used?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And again, I think that's part of the misconception because of the term Paycheck Protection Program. The use of the proceeds is not limited to payroll costs. Certainly for independent contractors, et cetera, it really can be a source of income replacement. But this time of year also, it's important for your listeners to understand they can use the proceeds for rent expenses, such as their land rent payments that are currently due, utility payments, certain costs and expenses with their suppliers, and even certain interest payments on loans, such as land loans and equipment loans.
That's amazing. I mean, it's... I don't know if you can call it an operating loan, but it sure feels like it in many ways. And we keep calling it loan, Nick, but it's a forgiven loan, right?
That's absolutely correct, Chip. That's the intent. And really, when this program was introduced as part of the CARES Act a year ago, it really was the intent of the Congress for this to be a grant program. So, you know, almost similar to the stimulus program right now. And the intent is absolutely for these loans to be fully forgiven as long as they're used appropriately, which, again, is pretty easy to do. In fact, as of March 11th, the SBA has issued information showing that over 99% of the loans that have gone through the forgiveness process have been fully forgiven.
Okay. Is there any warnings out there for those, that small fraction that isn't forgiven? I mean, what did they do wrong that it's not forgiven?
Really, they just inappropriately used the proceeds, and they may not have understood the parameters of the program. But, you know, the nice thing for your listeners is that those are really based on loans that were made last summer during the original round of the program. And this time around, the Congress and SBA and Treasury have really widened the scope of how these funds can be used. So it really is, you know, through the partner lenders such as ACAP and the Loan Source, really is straightforward as to how the loans can be used to ensure that they are fully forgiven. And again, the nice thing is forgiven loans are not taxed as income by the IRS.
Jeez. Okay. What's the easiest way to get more information? What's the easiest way to apply for the loans?
Really easy. Our partners at ACAP and the Loan Source have a website specifically set up for Farm Journal listeners, www.ppploanonline.com.
Outstanding. Nick, thank you so much for the information. Again, the deadline is March 31. There's a proposal and a bill to extend that to May 31, but it's limited amount of funds for this. So if you're going to use it, get on it and get your application in. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you, Chip. Take care.
All right, that is Nick Jellum. He is with Anastasi Jellum, an attorney there. Hey, thanks so much for listening this morning. Really appreciate you. Come back this afternoon. Going to have a conversation with Matt Bennett from agmarket.net. And tomorrow morning, we've got U.S. Representative Sam Graves standing by and ready to go. Sam's from Missouri, and he'll be right here on AgriTalk. He's got the bullets, he's got a gun. I got the anger for getting into something. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.